At JCPenney, we make fashion count for everybody and everybody. Get pieces that fit and flatter at prices that feel good. Mix easy on cargos with breezy tops or polish your look with soft suiting. Step into JCPenney brands that get you, like St. John's Bay and Worthington, each in women's petite and plus sizes too. Guys, you're good to go in brands like Mutual Weave, J. Farrar, and Stafford. Style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
You're listening to the Sisters in Loss podcast, a faith-based grief and loss podcast for Black women, where you will hear stories of miscarriage, infant loss, stillbirth, and infertility to learn there is a testimony in tragedy. You will learn how to heal, gain clarity, find hope and peace, and turn your pain into your purpose after loss. I'm your host, Erica M. McAfee.
Welcome to episode 63 of the Sisters in Loss podcast. In today's episode, we have Sunita Mitchell, who shares her infertility journey, infant loss story, and starting the Anias Project Foundation. Sunita is a wife, business owner, nonprofit CEO of Anias Project, and the mom of four children and one angel baby named Anaya. Sunita shares in this episode how having one of her tubes removed gave her a 10 to 12% chance of becoming pregnant on her own, how she naturally conceived her rainbow babies, and how that pregnancy, as well as her second rainbow baby pregnancy, was met with challenges, included a high-risk pregnancy, gestational diabetes, and also a uterine rupture. She also shares how she was led to start Anaya's Project, which serves couples or individuals who have experienced the painful experience of pregnancy and infant loss, as well as those who are experiencing infertility challenges. This episode is for you to listen to if you have had one of your tubes removed, and if you have had pregnancy challenges like gestational diabetes or being considered high risk. Here is Sunita Mitchell.
Thank you, Sunita, for being on the podcast.
Yes, thank you for the invite.
So I like to begin with you sharing a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Okay, so I am Sunita Mitchell. I am a wife, a mother, an entrepreneur. I have two businesses, actually three, that I operate. I own Bright Sparkles Family Daycare Center, which is what I do from Monday through Friday. And then I also, with my husband, we operate the Perfect Family Blend, where we focus on helping couples build and nurture their blended family so that they can have the family dynamics that they desire. And then we have Anaya's Project, which is our 501c3 organization, which is to help couples and families who have dealt with loss or are dealing with loss, as well as those families who are having difficulties with infertility. So we do, you know, we provide support groups and workshops and conferences and things. We just launched that in April of this year, so we'll talk more about that later. But I have four children. I have an older son who's about to be 26, a teenager who is 16. I have a five-year-old now. She just had a birthday. And then I have a three, almost four-year-old. And then, of course, we have the one angel baby, Anaya. So, and one dog named Jewel.
Cannot forget our dog babies. Awesome.
That's right. And one dog baby who is trying to figure out who all these little people are and why are they here. She's figuring it out daily. So, yeah.
Awesome. So take us back on your journey to motherhood and tell us and walk us through your loss story.
Okay. So as I mentioned, I am a part of a blended family. My husband and I had two boys coming into our marriage. And so once we got married on September 19, 2009, everybody was happy. We were all newlyweds. And a few months go by and I give my family some really exciting news that we will be welcoming a new person into the family. Everybody's excited. Everybody's full of joy. We knew we wanted to add to our family. We just weren't really expecting it to happen as quickly as it did, but you know, that's how it is when you're newlywed. And so we were even more delighted at the 20 weeks, I think it's about 16 weeks when we found out that we would be having a little princess to join our kingdom. Everybody was ecstatic and with great anticipation of the arrival of the first girl into our lives. This is my husband's first experience with pregnancy, and he was really excited and was very cautious and protective of me, didn't want me doing certain things. And so right around April of 2010, I had started to come down with what was seemingly a common cold. I went to the doctor. I was about 27 weeks when I was coming up with the cold, and I called my doctor, followed all the procedures, everything that they told me to do, taking my medicine, you know, keeping up with the prenatal vitamins. And so I went to the doctor on one day, and they sent me to labor and delivery, just, you know, as they said, a precaution, just to make sure everything was okay. I was beginning to have contractions, but they were thinking maybe it was just, you know, we were entering that phase with the Braxton Hicks. So they sent me, as I said, to labor and delivery, and they did a check, and then they send me home. They was like, okay, you're still having some contractions, but they should wear off as they're not as prevalent as they were when you first came in. They were kind of tempering off. They just told me to go home, drink some water, keep my feet up, and monitor. Well, I did. And so that night I had those same contractions throughout the night, and I kept a record, and they weren't within that time frame that they were telling me to call in. So I waited until the morning, and I called my doctor's office again, and they told me to come back in and to go straight to labor and delivery. And I did. And from that moment, that was a Friday, and they admitted me in, and they were just saying that, you know, I would remain there until the end of my pregnancy. They were like, you're not going to go back home. We're just going to keep you here and try to, you know, get, because I was having so many contractions. And I don't know if you've ever been so sick that you didn't know you were sick. And I don't think that they were trying to let me know that I was as sick as I was, because, for example, I didn't know I had a fever. I just thought I was hot, because when you're pregnant, your temperature is different. And so everybody else is walking around bundled up. And I'm thinking, oh, it's just cold in the hospital to them. And eventually the nurse tells me, no, you're hot because you have a fever. And I was like, oh, I didn't know that. And so they told me that I had an infection. They weren't sure where the infection had come from. They couldn't pinpoint what it was, but they had put me on the magnesium sulfate to really try to control the contractions, because they were really coming quickly. And so they had me on this regimen where I had to continue to breathe into this apparatus to kind of keep my lungs open, because they were saying that I was, because of whatever infection, they wanted to make sure my lungs were clear and, you know, to breathe in this like every 2 hours. So Saturday rolls around and my husband says, well, let's do your treatment. And the nurse had just came in and she said, well, let me back up a little bit. They had said, as long as your water doesn't break, then you're good. You know, we're good. We're optimistic. They gave us the, if she delivered early, what they would do, they would put her in the NICU. And so my husband did that tour, because of course I couldn't get up. So he went to the NICU to see where she would be, just in case she delivered, if we had to deliver Anaya early. And so my husband went and he came back. This was on that Saturday. And so everything seemed good. They were very optimistic. They said that we had all the great odds that they looked for. We were having a girl. Girls are very strong. She's African American. They tend to be excellent fighters in the premature world. So she had a lot of odds in her favor. And so we were believing God, but it was somewhere in the midst of Saturday, I kept listening to a particular song and I couldn't pinpoint exactly what I was feeling, but I just felt like I was praying to God that everything would be okay. And I just had this numbness. I can't really explain what that feeling was, but I was still trying to be optimistic about what was going on. So my water, I blow into, my husband says to do the treatment, so I do, and I blow into the air pump thing, and all of a sudden I felt this gush, whoosh. And me and my husband, my eyes got so big. My husband looked at me and I said, he says, what's wrong? And I said, oh, I think my water just broke. We need to call the nurse. So he called the nurse. And even though I've had two children before, I've never had my water break. They've always broken for me. So I didn't know what exactly that would feel like, having the water break on its own. And so the nurse comes in and she's like, let me check. And she goes and gets the strip. She puts the strip down and the look on her face said it all before she could even really say anything. We knew at that moment that was my water had broken. And she said, and she of course confirmed it, called the doctors, and they basically were saying they would come up with a game plan for what we were going to do. They didn't deliver right away. They said we would wait a couple more days. And so they did. And so by Monday, the change of nurses came and the nurse checked me and she's like, you, things are not looking. She said, I'm going to be honest with you. The infection is really raging, but you're not responding to any of the antibiotics. You're not responding to this magnesium sulfate. And that's, we cannot leave you on this for extremely long periods of time. So over those days, they had given me the shots to kind of try to make sure that her lungs would mature. And so they proceeded to say that they would go ahead and deliver. And so at that moment, I really didn't know what to say. My husband was trying so hard to be strong. I think he was a little confused and nervous, and he had his own range of emotions of what was going on. My parents had arrived super quick. I mean, they must have did like 90 trying to get to the hospital in time for the delivery. And I just remember my husband leaning over the rails of the bed and I just held his hand and told him, it's going to be okay. It's going to be okay. It's all right. They rolled us back into the OR. And from that point, everything moved very seemingly quickly. And they deliver Anaya. And all I remember is it was real black. Now, of course, in the OR, it's not black, but it was black to me. And the reason why it was black was because as the doctor, the one thing I remember last was as the doctor did the C-section, I remember them pulling her out real quickly and everybody dispersed. But then after that, everything went black. And I just remember waking up saying, like it was a dream, where is my baby? And then it was like I was trying to wake up, where is my baby? Where is my baby? Where is my baby? And I'll never forget how the doctor, she looked over the curtain and she just said these words that just still just ring so well in my head is, I'm so sorry. And from that moment, everything goes black. And the reason why everything goes black is because literally my doctor said that they had to have the anesthesiologist give me something to just knock me out cold because I had tried to get up off of the gurney to go see where my baby was because she was like, I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean you're sorry? Where's my baby? So they had to literally constrain me, put me down onto this bed and to finish sewing, stitching me back up. And as I remember waking back up in the recovery room, my husband was there, my parents were there, and the grief counselor, the chaplain was there. And my doctor had came in a little bit later. And it was just total devastation, total shock. it was just unreal. And so when they handed her to me, I just remember just looking down at her, and just a whole stream of tears came rolling down my face. And I remember my husband coming to hug me, and all I could tell him was, I'm so sorry. And I'm so sorry I couldn't do this one thing for you. I'm so sorry. And he just, you know, collapsed on me and holding Anaya. And that is pretty much how that day went. We just were in shock. I mean, my parents were shocked. I don't think my dad knew what to say. My mom was, of course, she was shocked and was hugging me and everything. And the staff, they were very good. They took pictures of us and everything, but it just was not the outcome that we were really trusting and believing God for.
Wow. So after you had her, were you able to spend some time with her? And did you all have a memorial service for her?
Yes. So we delivered at Anne Arundel Medical Center out in Annapolis, Maryland, and they were phenomenal. We were able to have Anaya every day that I was in the hospital. So for 3 days I was there, maybe 3 or 4 days that I was in the hospital, they allowed us to keep her there. They would take her back and forth because they were saying, you know, they had to keep her cool. So we were able to keep her. And every day they would ask us, were we okay with keeping her there? So they were very open and very flexible with, one, the number of people that we had coming in. We had a huge support system that we didn't know we had, really. And so they were very accommodating to the number of people. So yes, we were able to keep her with us. They would take her back down to the morgue to kind of cool her and preserve her for as long as possible. And then they would bring her back to us. But yes, that was very wonderful. And in fact, the last time at one point, because she looked so beautiful, we remember her having like a smile on her face. And it was like we were thanking God because he allowed us to see her smile. And I remember looking at her toes, looking at her fingers, looking at, she had like a dimple on her cheek. And it was wonderful to behold. But right around that third day, we noticed that she was beginning to change. And we didn't want to leave on that note. We wanted to keep the image of her smile. And once we noticed that the smile had kind of gone away, we made the decision to tell them that we just didn't want to see her like that anymore. That was very difficult because we knew that that would be the last time that we would physically see her. And so when it came down to the memorial service, we had her cremated. At that time, we just didn't have finances to do like a burial. So after talking to our pastor and a couple of the ministers, we were okay with the cremation. That was a very difficult decision. We had to wrap our head around doing cremation. And then once we did the memorial service, I really honestly didn't do anything for this memorial. I mentally could not plan my daughter's memorial service. So really, my husband and his aunt, she stepped right in, and I mean, we didn't have to do anything. She did all the programs. She did the flowers. She did everything. They picked out poems. They picked out everything. My pastor did the eulogy, which was beautiful, but I absolutely couldn't do anything. Just was not there to do anything for that. And I made that clear to my husband. I just couldn't do it. Leading up to the memorial, My older children, they were devastated by it. We all wore pink. And, you know, we had the memorial service. Going to get her body for that was tough, too, because that was like, we have her here and we had to bring her. Well, his aunt brought her to the memorial, to the church for the memorial service. But, yeah, that was very trying, very, very trying time.
Wow. So after After you had your memorial service, how did you and your husband deal with your grief? You know, really, how did it impact your faith in God?
So actually, I dealt with a lot of depression. And once the memorial service was over, it was like another, if you will, slap in the face, because now we've left the hospital empty-handed. We've gone to a memorial service, and now we, you know, for some people, it was like, that's a closed chapter, that's done, and you guys can move on. But for us, it was very difficult because, as I said, I dealt with my own depression. Even coming home and in my recovery, because I'm still recovering even at the memorial service. So there were times when I battled suicidal thoughts. There were times when I actually tried to think about committing suicide and actually was about to do it. And then I heard God tell me, clear as day, clear as I talk to you now, you can do this. And so I really felt like I couldn't. You know, and me and my husband were, at that time, I could say I really wasn't thinking about his emotions. I wasn't thinking about his feelings. I wasn't even really, not saying concerned, but like his feelings to me was not as great as mine. So meaning I felt like because I carried her, I was closer. I had a different relationship that he would have never had with her. And yet, eventually, we kept talking, and he told me, you know, eventually he told me, like, he had to make that decision with her. And I think I left that part out, was that when she was born, the NICU doctors were doing CPR on her, and she was non-responsive. And so they said that they would keep doing the CPR on her as long as he wanted them to. And so eventually he said, you know what, I don't want you guys to hurt her. I don't want her to be in any pain. And so he told them to stop. But before they stopped, he wanted her to be baptized. And so when he told me that, this probably like the second or third time after her memorial service, it really clicked to me that he was really suffering on his own, because he felt like he was making the decision, and he made that decision, and he wanted to know if it was the right decision. And so he, because of our faith, we were very active in our church, and we were leaders, and, you know, we were believing God for the impossible in a lot of things in our life. And so at that moment, when he told me that, you know, he was like questioning, did he make the right decision? And then I felt like at that time, again, this is right after the memorial service, I felt like his faith wasn't strong. I mean, that's just where I was. I felt like your faith wasn't strong enough to keep her here. And I didn't say that to him right then and there, but that's where I was with it. And so I questioned his faith. And so then later, I questioned mine, because I was like, well, God, you know, I felt like we had a really great relationship, and yet I didn't have enough faith to keep my daughter here. I didn't have enough faith to declare and decree her healing. I didn't have enough faith for my past. You were punishing me, God, for my past. I thought that you said you forgave me as far as the east is to the west, but you brought this back to me, and now you've taken my daughter. So I think individually we both struggled with our faith, but we didn't really waddle in it too long. There were some times when I was strong, and there were some times when he was weak, and then, you know, vice versa. And so really, it just came down to us just continuing to pray and to continue to worship. And God would always send somebody that would speak a word to us. And while we didn't always receive it because we were in a hurt, broken place, eventually just hearing it and, you know, just believing that God had a reason and a purpose for it. But that took time. That wasn't like the first, that was not the first few months. This was some time going by the time we got to that, being able to accept, getting into the acceptance stage of grief.
So when did you all decide to try again? And tell us about your journey to your rainbow baby.
Okay, so because we had Anaya with what they call a classical C-section, we were told to wait a year. But we weren't put on any type of birth control or anything. She was just saying that if, you know, it happens before that year, then so be it, we'll deal with it. And so the first year after Anaya, probably around, actually, it was about maybe 7 months after Anaya's, losing Anaya, that I was obsessed with trying to have another baby. Like, and I was wondering, like, why it hadn't happened. And so, I mean, I was on a rigid, I was trying every app, I was on every website, if it could predict when I was going to ovulate, you know, I was like, we're going to have another baby. And so right around right around December of 2010, I had talked to my husband and he was like, sure, you know, even with my own personal obsession, he didn't really know how obsessed I was with it. But when it wasn't occurring, it just kept sending me into a great, like, depression. And sometimes people would come up to us and say, oh, when are y'all going to have another one? But they didn't know that I was really trying and it wasn't happening. And so right around that December 2010, I found out that I had a positive test. So I was really excited. And then I called my doctor and they told me, oh, okay, you know, but then we will, you know, come in, you know, you have to wait a certain point before they want you to come in. But they wanted me to come in for the urine test, the blood test. Well, as soon as I had called, made that appointment, and like maybe literally the next day, I started bleeding. And I was so like, what is going on? And so I called back to my doctor's office and they put the doctor on the phone. And, you know, she asked me some questions. And so I had actually, she said it was a miscarriage. She said, well, the body is already doing what it's supposed to be doing. So either it was a false positive or you are indeed miscarrying. So, you know, she didn't need me to come in for that because she said it was really early on. Total devastation again, because, and then to add salt to the wound, I had already told a good friend of mine who was also expecting, just found out that she was expecting. So we were very excited about going through pregnancy together, only to find out that I had, you know, that this pregnancy had ended. And so we began again to try over and over again, and no result, none whatsoever. Wasn't getting pregnant, nothing was happening. And so I had to ask myself the question, like, what is going on? You know, I need to face reality that there may be something wrong. So I got over myself and I called the doctor and I said, you know, something's got to be wrong because, you know, we're not using any birth control and I'm not pregnant. And I mean, we're, you know, we are like little rabbits over here because I'm just like, I just want to have another baby. And so nothing. So she called me in and we did a whole bunch of tests and she sent me to Shady Grove Fertility to be tested to, you know, so that they can gauge what some options may be on what it was happening. So they did. We did some tests. My husband had to do some tests that he was uncomfortable with. And so, and then I had the test, which comes to find out that one of my tubes were blocked. Mm. And so they had to remove a tube. And so they told me that would lessen my chances to about 10 to 12%. And then they said, well, because you're over 35, you know, your chances are even slimmer. So we're only going to give you like 6 months to try on your own. And then we have to look at you taking some, you know, pills to try to help you conceive. Otherwise, if that doesn't work, your last resort is IVF. total devastation again. I cannot. Now you're telling me, now my fertility is in jeopardy. Now my fertility is being questioned. Now I'm down to a 10 to 12% chance. I have never had a problem getting pregnant before. Why are you doing this? And so I have my tube removed. And, you know, after I healed up from that, they told us that we could begin trying. So we did. And we were really planning on going to Hawaii to get this, you know, party started. But lo and behold, I become pregnant. And so when we found out we were pregnant, we went back to Shady Grove Fertility. They confirmed the pregnancy. However, just as soon as we found out, they were questioning how pregnant was I, because the numbers weren't matching. And so they were saying, well, the heartbeat should be beating by now. And it wasn't. And so, but go to Hawaii and come back. And we, you know, we'll know for sure by the time you come back. Really go to Hawaii, enjoy yourself, but you're pregnant and you're not sure if your baby has a heartbeat. Sure. So we went to Hawaii. We tried to enjoy ourselves. And when we came back, we couldn't wait to get back to go to the doctors. And when we got there, boom, 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 boom. The most beautiful sound ever we could ever imagine was when we found out that indeed we were pregnant, and it was right on time. And so after that, we became high risk. And so we went to another doctor's office where we would start our high risk pregnancy journey from there, going and getting injections every week and being seen for non-stress tests and BPP body profiles. And I had everything with that pregnancy: gestational diabetes, sciatic nerve, carpal tunnel swelling. I had so much. I didn't even find out. We didn't even find out what we were having once we had our rainbow baby. And so, but you know, through that whole time, I was fine, because I knew, I was just praying that I would be able to keep this baby until it was time to deliver. And right around that 28th week, of course, I was nervous, because that was around the same time I lost Anaya. But my doctors were very compassionate and very caring people. And so they were extra, extra, extra nice to us. From that point, they even celebrated. See, you got past that. See, we're at 30 weeks. We're at 35 weeks. We're at 36 weeks. We're good. It's okay. It's okay. Like, I cried in the hospital, you know, in my doctor's appointment, and they understood. And so the day that this little bundle, our rainbow baby, made her debut, of course, we had it scheduled for C-section, but of course, as always, this little person, she does things on her own, and we learned that it was a girl. She came on her own terms, as always, and she's still like that, age 5. So it's all about her. Yeah, so that was our journey to the first rainbow baby, and we were not even expecting to be able to conceive again. And like literally 3 months after I had gone back for my checkup, the 8-week checkup, I was fine. And then I found out I was pregnant again.
Wow.
I was pregnant again. And I was just like, are you kidding me?
Oh my,
like,
goodness.
Pregnant again? Okay. This baby is 3 months and I'm pregnant again. Yeah. So it was really, really, really nobody but God that got us through not just one rainbow baby, but he gave us two rainbow babies. So we were truly indeed blessed with that.
Awesome.
Hey, sisters-in-law, you know I love listening to podcasts. One of my newest favorite shows to listen to is the Mommy Faceted podcast, hosted by my sister, Rachel Pierre. Mommy Faceted is the voice for the everyday woman of color who are juggling home, life, career, and doing what it takes to also follow their own passions. What I love about this podcast is that Rachel interviews all your favorite business CEOs and moms who are juggling marriage, entrepreneurship, entrepreneurship and motherhood gracefully. She has interviewed some of your favorites, like Rochelle Graham Campbell, CEO of Allocate Naturals, fellow podcaster Dr. Joy Harden Bradford of Therapy for Black Girls, and even some of your favorite influencers like Maddie James and Janelle B. Stewart. So if I were you, I would go right on over after this podcast is over with and check out the Mommy Faceted podcast and let Rachel know that Sisters-in-Law sent you.
So let's talk about your foundation, the Anias Project, and what you all are doing with the foundation.
So Anias Project is just, it's our 501c3 nonprofit organization. As I said, that is to serve families who have gone through the devastation of losing their pregnancy, infant, and are struggling or dealing with challenges with infertility. We will be hosting several workshops and different things to not only engage the couples but to engage the entire family. So on June 16th, the men will get together and deal with grief, because the one thing that we learned throughout our own scenario is that the men are neglected often. They are bypassed. They don't really have a platform to share their grief. They're often told to be strong, to, you know, not show their emotions. Most people tend to only ask them about their wife or girlfriend or significant others. No one asks them how they're coping. So it was important that we have this workshop for the husbands, the boyfriends, the significant other, males only, because women, we do a great job of coming together and sharing our feelings, but men need to be in an environment where it's okay to deal with their grief. So on June 16th, the men will have a father's heart grief session, and it's going to be some powerful men in the room who are going to share grief. Now, with this grief, there's all types of grief. We really was compelled to do it, to open it up to people who are grieving the loss of children, their children at any age, infancy or their pregnancy, to really just give the men the platform. And so that's that event on June 16th. Then we'll have the Begin Again brunch. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited about that, because to begin again, what does that mean? That to live again, to start again, not just to be able to conceive again, but to be able to live, to breathe, to laugh again, to enjoy your marriage again, to be able to enjoy the children you have again, to try again if that's what you want to do, if you want to try again, to begin again, to say it's okay to begin again. So this brunch is all about just giving people an opportunity to be around others who have gone through different things. I mean, our stories, we've all grieved. We may have lost pregnancies. We may have lost infants. We may have struggled with some fertility. But sometimes, you know, the word of God says when you're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, you have that joy, you have that hope again. And so that is basically what the Begin Again brunch is going to be. And we're going to have some delicious food. There's going to be music. There's going to be vendors there who are all there to help us to begin again, to start over again, to try again, to really just be an uplifting and encouragement for all who attend. And so that is what Anias Project is doing. Like, we have so many different things that we want to give back, want to pour back into the community, because we know that during our journey, we really felt alone. And so we want to make sure that people, that families don't feel alone. And it's always good to be with someone around people who understand exactly, who understand what you're saying, who understand what you're feeling. And no matter how long ago, whether you lost one, however long ago they lost an infant or a pregnancy, we understand. It's been 8 years since we lost Anaya, and we still grieve over her. We still miss her. And so there is no time limit to grief. And sometimes when people haven't experienced this type of grief, they can't understand it. But Anaya's Project is there to help others to endure and to believe again and to hope again.
Amen. So what encouraging words can you leave the mother who's out there who has experienced loss and is looking to try again?
So for the mother who has experienced loss and want to try again, I would say to really just don't lose heart. Don't lose faith. To continue against all the odds sometimes, that you just got to hold on to your faith. You've got to really listen to what's in your heart. And if you believe that you want to have another child, then go after it. Try everything that you can so that you don't live in regret. I should have, would have, could have. But to really just be open to other possibilities. If by chance you want to have another child and you go through all these tests, IVF, all the different testings, and you try again and maybe it doesn't work, what I found was I had to become open. Like, I really just started to become open to different ideas that would produce the family that I wanted. And so I became okay with maybe looking at other options, like just be open to the different ways that getting to motherhood, how you can get there. Be open to some of the different options. But by all means, try everything by faith. That's what I would tell the mother who wants to try to begin again, and to not live in fear. Cannot stay in fear, because see, fear will hold you captive. Fear will hold you in a prison, and you won't be able to fully be able to enjoy. When you do become pregnant again, you won't be able to enjoy it because you're in so much fear. So don't live in fear. That's something else I would tell the mother who wants to begin again, is to not let fear hold you captive. Don't let fear hold you in a prison, but to burst through and go after what you want. And then, yeah, that's what I would tell her.
Awesome. So where can we find your website and where can we find you on social?
Okay, so you can find me on aniasproject.org. It's the main website for Anaya's Project. And then we are Anaya's Project on Facebook. We are Anaya's Project on all social media handles. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, and we're on Facebook. And so that's where you can find us.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Sunita, for being on the podcast and sharing your story, as well as Anaya's Project.
Thank you for having me. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I pray that this show was inspirational and a blessing to you. For show notes, visit ericaandmcafee.com/podcast. Please join us in our offline discussions and our private Facebook group by going to sistersinloss.com. If you're listening in Apple Podcasts, please rate and subscribe to us and leave us a 5-star review. I pray that you all have a blessed week. Keep the faith, and I'll talk to you next Wednesday.